Hello and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly podcast, where we discuss leadership issues which have made the news outlets in recent days. This week, we're focusing on events up to the 8th of March 2019. My name's Nick Scott. I'm an economist and academic working with the Institute of Leadership and Management, and I'm joined today by the Institute's Head of Research, Policy and Standards, Kate Cooper. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Nick.
Our first news story considers how diversity champions Involve are pushing for ethnicity pay gap reporting. Personnel Today reports that a number of high-profile UK employers, including the Bank of England, Bupa, Lloyds of London and the big accounting firms, have signed up to voluntary reporting that involves a seven-step programme of gathering, reviewing and acting upon internal data that may highlight the causes of an ethnicity pay gap. Kate, what are the merits of reporting on any ethnicity pay gap?
I'm particularly pleased to hear about this week because, of course, today we're celebrating International Women's Day. And it's so easy to sometimes forget that when you're campaigning for inclusivity for an underrepresented group, for example, women, the benefits of other underrepresented groups are there as well. So ethnicity pay gap reporting is hopefully going to have the same impact in terms of the difficult questions it raises, the difficult conversations that need to be had. So the benefit here from the gender pay gap, which was only, of course, our first year last year, is that these other groups are saying, well, that's a great way of not only calculating inequality, but being able to talk about it in a way that's now understood and in the public domain. And I think this seven-step process really does draw our attention to the fact that measuring it is absolutely the place to start, but then we go from measurement to action. We know there are systemic inequalities in the labour market, in the way people are promoted, in the way people are selected, in the way people are given opportunities. So any sort of reporting like this has to have those follow-on actions that emerge from it.
Our second news item reflects on new research from headhunters Norrie Johnson, which highlights the continuing developing role of chief operating officers, known as COOs. The research notes the wide range of responsibilities, varied skill set, and evident adaptability that COOs need to display. So, Kate, what makes this such a special role?
I think we're hearing so much more about COOs recently, and one of the reasons that I think would explain that is how we're shortening in so many ways the strategic planning gap because environments are more volatile, because more disruptions are affecting so many more industries. That gap between strategic intent, which would be set by the CEO and the senior management team, has to be operationalised. It has to be made happen by the COO. So these people have to be able to be in both worlds. And I've felt for a long time that anybody who thinks that you can divorce or separate operations from strategy is actually not going to be adaptable, flexible, and ready to flex your strategy when circumstances change. So this is an incredibly skilled role because they are the reality check on maybe some of the more ambitious or fanciful ideas that emanate from the CEO and the senior team, and to sell the changes to the people that actually do the operations, make the strategy come to life. And I think I also add in this piece, they really did draw attention to the situational nature of this role and how context specific it is. And so how all the time you're having to adjust and adapt, and that very important relationship with your CEO and the business environment in which you're operating.
Our final news item this week reflects upon the UK's overtime culture, with a TUC press release reflecting their Work Your Proper Hours Day, now entering its 15th year. They celebrate the 1st of March on the basis that, in effect, over the course of a typical year, you will have worked those first 2 months for free through voluntary unpaid overtime. TUC analysis of government data notes that 5 million people put in an average of 7.5 hours per week of unpaid overtime. Francis O'Grady of the TUC argues that too many employers are taking unfair and unreasonable advantage. So, Kate, how can leadership figures get a grip on this issue?
The problem it gives you is when we're always looking for that elusive going the extra mile, if we're asking for that every day, what is the extra mile? Is it working all weekend as well? So it is a long, hard look at the culture that we have, our expectations of our staff, and that very important psychological contract that we're not taking advantage of you. We have your well-being at heart. And of course, as we all know, working excessive hours continually is not good for our well-being.
Hugging at Work made the news again this week, and Kate was interviewed by various local BBC radio stations. Here's a typical example from BBC Humberside.
BBC Radio Humberside with Andy Comfort. The founder and chief executive of the fashion chain, Ted Baker, Ray Kelvin, has resigned following allegations of inappropriate behaviour. Staff say they were subjected to forced hugging, cuddling and even kissing on the neck. Well, if you're a manager in a workplace, how do you draw the line and what's acceptable when it comes to touching? Kate Cooper joins us from the Institute of Leadership and Management. Kate, good afternoon to you.
Hello.
The examples I gave there clearly weren't welcomed by the staff there at Ted Baker. So where do you draw the line?
I think the starting point has to be, do you want anybody who works for you or with you to feel embarrassed, uncomfortable, not wanting to be around you? And the answer to that has to be no. And if a lot of people don't want to be hugged, don't think there's a place for that sort of physical contact at work, and that's without getting into the minefield of power dynamics, I think the manager's the one that has to be the most thoughtful, the most self-aware, and always looking for the right cues that you're making feel somebody feeling good, not bad.
Given some of the stories we've seen, though, doesn't it seem that some senior managers are totally out of touch?
I think that's a kind interpretation of it. They're thinking, I like hugging, everybody should like hugging, the world would be a better place if we did a lot more hugging, therefore I'm going around hugging people, without really thinking that they're imposing behaviour on people who are less powerful, less able to speak up, and might actually think that their job prospects are going to be adversely affected because they're refusing physical contact. It's so thoughtless at one level, and then taken to an extreme, it's more sinister than that.
Very much so. I mean, on a day-to-day basis in a workplace, though, what do you want from your manager? I mean, you want a manager who actually cares about you, who cares about your well-being, don't you?
You do, and managers can convey that in all sorts of ways. They can use words that say how they appreciate, you can ask questions, you can bring people treats, and you can buy them cups of coffee, and you can show you care about them. And you can do all of that very safely without any sort of physical contact.
Should there be a sort of respectful distance between managers and staff then, just to make sure that there aren't any boundaries blurred?
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? Because we probably all individually will have what we consider our safe space and what we consider an intrusion. And that, of course, changes from culture to culture. So it'd be very difficult to say, well, 20 centimetres is too near and 80 centimetres is about right. But again, it's back to that level of self-awareness and empathy that all the time we're looking to see how it's making the other people feel, whether that's what we're saying or what we're doing. We're always looking for those cues so that they're telling us what's okay and what's not.
Good advice, Kate. Thank you. Kate Cooper there from the Institute of Leadership and Management.
Thanks to Kate and guest interviewer Andy Comfort from the BBC. We're out of time for another week. Please go to the website www.institutelm.com to find out more about the Institute of Leadership and Management. We'll be back with more newsworthy items next week, so please subscribe to this podcast series on the website or via iTunes or Spotify.